I love talking about birds and certainly very much enjoy talking about one bird, the crane. And Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Jeb Barzin, field director, and Alyssa Rodd, lead naturalist of the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo, our guest today to talk about cranes and counting those cranes. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along today and visit with them. The numbers to call, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890. The annual Midwest Crane Count coming up. And Jeb Barzin, first, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
And Alyssa, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us. Coming up this Saturday, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. It's that time of year again.
And what is the purpose of the crane count?
Well, there's a couple goals that we have with the crane count. One is to involve people, and Alyssa can talk about that maybe more a little bit. But it also provides us with data on where cranes are in the state and roughly how many there are in those places. And we use that in a really surprising number of ways.
Yeah, I would bet. Crane count itself starts early in the day and goes all through the day. Is that right, Alyssa?
Actually, the count starts at an early time, but it's still a wonderful time in the morning of 5:30. Mm-hmm. And we count till 7:30 while the birds are a little more stable, not moving around quite as much.
So it's just a two-hour time block.
But people are more than welcome to still hang out and spend some time with their families and friends out in nature for the rest of the day.
And that's one of those kind of important goals of it, is just to get people out into the wild. It provides good data, but it's just a wonderful, you know, we all need excuses to go outdoors. Mm-hmm. And this is a great one to be able to see a sunrise and hear birds bugle.
Oh, man, it really is a wonderful time. I'm one of these people who gets up early anyway, and it's probably one of the best times of the day to be out, isn't it? I love it.
It's quiet and noisy at the same time. It's just a different noise.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. We hear so many things. You see so many animals. Very active time of the day.
It's kind of fun. I know during this time of the year with the turkeys, they're in their mating time, and you hear a train whistle or something from far off, and there'll be an old tom turkey will answer that train whistle. Does that happen with cranes?
Well, you'll get all kinds of calls when you have things going by. A coyote might come by, and all of a sudden a crane will do an alarm call, or another crane flying by. They're not quite, we like to think of cranes as being a little bit smarter than a turkey, but you find all kinds of strange things because, you know, you go out before light, and as the dawn comes, if you've gone to your site quietly, you'll find that there's all kinds of animals that are about. And they'll all of a sudden notice you but perceive you very differently because you've been there for a long period of time. And it's that different perspective that you get that's really quite fun.
Yeah, I think so too. The first crane count was when? 1976.
And that was actually just one county, Columbia County.
By a bunch of high school students.
The crane count, is that right?
The crane count was started as a high school project.
And I believe in just the one county then. As you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gradually expanded, and the Crane Foundation got more and more involved, and we took it first statewide, which was about 1982 that we first started covering all the counties most of the counties in the state. And then we've been adding places in southeastern Minnesota, in Iowa, in Michigan, and primarily in the Upper Peninsula there, you know, but also in the Lower Peninsula.
Tell you what, we had some problems with our phone lines, but I think we have those lines working now. So if you were trying to get in and couldn't get in, I'll let you know that the numbers are good, and go ahead and call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments about cranes themselves or about the crane count. We'd love to hear from you. I'm wondering, as I recall, this works through a county coordinator, the count itself. Is that what happens, Alyssa?
Exactly. I work with almost 100 county coordinators, and each one of those people take on a responsibility and a, and a I think they have a great time doing it, being able to coordinate with individuals within those counties, getting them the information, talking about cranes, getting everybody really excited.
So, and people can still sign up to do this, by the way?
They sure can. They can find, anybody can find out more information by either calling the Crane Foundation at 608-356-9462, and you'll want extension 127, and you'll get some of my coworkers or me a little bit later today. Also, you can check out our website. It's really easy to find. You just punch in cranecount.org, and you'll get our website where you can find out more information about when the count is, where it is, and the coordinators.
So it's cranecount.org, but then what's that number again? It's area 608.
356-9462. And either you can talk to the operator, she'll direct you to the right way, or 127 is our extension where you can find me, and we'll get more information out to you.
Wonderful. Well, we have some calls, callers online, so let's go to the phones. Jeff in Horicon is up first. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. Two questions, and I'll take my answers off the air. First, what makes great crane habitat? And the second question is, what does the International Crane Foundation do to improve crane habitat? And I'll take my questions off the air, or the answers off the air.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, what makes great habitat for cranes?
Well, for cranes in North America, great habitat is typically a good quality wetland that's still surviving and is surrounded by open grasslands around that wetland. That can be good habitat. Now, that can be agricultural fields, which essentially are open grassland habitats, mm-hmm. or sometimes soil at this time of year. But it also can be more native grasslands as well. What ICF does to improve crane habitat depends upon where we're working. In Vietnam, we've restored wetlands in the Mekong Delta. We actually work with people to deal with poverty situations because the people interact with the habitats that the birds mm-hmm. use, and collectively it's an ecosystem, which is really the fundamental thing that cranes and people and all kinds of other species share. So we do a number of different things to try and deal with the ecosystem, primarily focused on restoration. In North America, especially in Wisconsin, we haven't done things directly with habitat improvement as such, because a lot of times that the cranes are increasing because they've had good habitat there. Wisconsin, mm-hmm. depending on if you want to look at the glass and say if it's half full or half empty, Wisconsin has lost a lot of wetlands since prior to European settlement, but we still have well over 60% of our wetlands remaining. Compared to Iowa, which has about 2% of its wetlands remaining,
wow.
it's a good story. And so where those wetlands are located next to agriculture has been a great place where cranes have been able to increase on their own. But part of that success story then is to say, okay, if we have this successful increase of cranes, what do we do when they actually are numerous? And mm-hmm. so a lot of our efforts there have been to work with farmers to find ways of solving the problems that cranes can often cause to crops. So we've mm-hmm. solved crop damage problems and are working to get that kind of information out there. And so in that way, we're actually trying to not improve habitat as such, but improve the manner in which people and cranes interact.
And educate people a bit.
I hope.
Yeah, I hope so. Pam in Spring Green has a question for you. Hi, Pam.
Hi, I have a crane story.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, outside the village, I found a crane that had been hit by a car or a truck. And he was dead, and there was hardly any marks on him at all. So I picked him up and took him off over to the side of the road and over a culvert where he'd be safe. I didn't want him run over, and I just thought, well, I needed to take him off and put him in the grass someplace. And then I thought about it later on, and I thought, no, something just brought me back there. I don't know why. I just had to go back. And so a friend and I went back, and we picked him up, and we were trying to decide what to do when we heard another crane calling. And way across the road, and this is out of Spring Green, so it's wetlands and woods, and way across the road up against the forest line, there was another crane. It was way far away, at least a football field, maybe more. It was a single crane there, just standing there calling. And we thought it must be the mate. And so we carried the dead crane across the road and into the field as far as we could go, found a large area of leftover winter stubble and old remains of the old cornfield, and we laid him down there where he wouldn't be seen from the road and where he'd be hopefully safe from, I don't know, predators. And we saw the crane up by the wood, just standing there up by the line of the woods, still very far away, and she was quiet. There was no sound anymore. And we left, we went back, we got in our cars, and we drove down to the next intersection. It was only maybe about 50 yards down over by Unity Chapel near here Taliesin. And then we turned around, came back. We couldn't have been gone more than 5 minutes. And when we came back to the same spot in the road, and we looked over there, and the crane was there by the body. She'd come directly from way, way up there on the line of the woods. Somehow or other knew that what we were doing.
Oh.
And she came down, and she was standing. She or he was standing there by the body. And as we watched, he'd bend down and sort of nudge it, and then he'd stand up. And not a sound. He was just grieving, just mourning. And it was so, so sad.
Oh. That's quite. Thank you for calling and sharing that story, Jeb. Is do cranes mate for life?
Well, yes, they can, and the fidelity that mates can often have is this is a great example of it.
Yeah.
When we actually have studied cranes over a long period of time, there are exceptions to that rule, and that some cranes don't mate for life, but. The fact is that many cranes do, and that pair bond can be really quite strong. And the story is an eloquent illustration of that kind of thing. You know, in a broader perspective, it's a great raison d'être for why the Crane Foundation exists. Is that cranes are cool, and mm-hmm. Cranes elicit these strong. Ability of people to relate to the wild environment around them as exemplified by the cranes. And that ability is really critical to the success of anything that we do. And we can, if we take that and use that to focus on cranes and the environments in which they live, which include people, we can really accomplish a great deal. But it's that basic, very simple way of having very different people work together is that they see that value that this caller, that Pam is describing.
Pam, thank you again. I appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Jeb Barzin, field director, and Alyssa Rod, lead naturalist of the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about cranes and counting cranes today with Jeb Barzin and Alyssa Rod from the International Crane Foundation. The annual Midwest Crane Count this Saturday from 5:30 in the morning to 7:30 in the morning. And you can still get involved, and I hope you do. Go to cranecount.org for a quick way to find out how you can become involved in counting cranes this coming Saturday. Still get involved. Mike in Rice Lake has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, I was on March 28th, I was riding my bicycle north of Rice Lake, and I heard some cranes overhead. And I looked up, and there were two groups of four, and they were traveling. The one group was much fair amount higher than the other, and they were traveling in an oblique path. So I'm assuming that they were trying to catch a thermal. But the lower group, one of the cranes was noticeably larger and white with black primaries. Was I seeing things, or is it their color phase, or was that actually possibly a whooper? I know that they'd done some fostering work back in the 60s or something, but has anybody else seen this?
Well, I don't know. Alyssa or Jeb, what do you think, Jeb?
Well, it's you describe what you would expect to see with a whooping crane flying over. They are a larger bird than a sandhill by about 20 to 30%. They are largely white with black primaries, so you would see that as black wingtips. And some of the whooping cranes might be seen migrating with sandhill cranes. So everything that you're saying is quite consistent. with what we'd expect to see. We are reintroducing whooping cranes into Wisconsin, primarily in the Nisida areas where they're being released. And those birds have also wandered out farther from that area, and so it's very possible that you have seen it. It's always, I don't know if that would be an unusual place to see a bird or not, or if it would be an unusual individual within that population. Oh. But if you want to contact us at the Crane Foundation, we can always try to follow up on it as best we can, because you never know when a sighting that you have like that is one that we really need to know about, because we try the best that we can to keep track of these birds. But we're now over about 60 in the wild.
74 total.
That would be over 60.
Right, yeah.
That's wonderful. What's your website, or how do we people get a hold of you then?
Our website is www.savingcranes.org.
Savingcranes.org.
Yeah, and
okay,
if you look at that.
I did email you on that date, and then I also emailed Laura Erickson in case she would see something if they were traveling north.
Yeah.
Or she gets in touch with just about every birder up in the north.
Yeah. You didn't get a response from us then, I presume?
No.
Well, then we publicly and to statewide, we screwed up. And I apologize for that. Why don't you give, we can solve that problem, and you can just email me if you want at jeb@savingcranes.org.
Okay.
And we'll follow through on it.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Bob in Darlington is up next. Bob, hi.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Larry, and I've got a question that sort of fits in with your last caller, and it's this. Yeah, Audrey and I, our son lives in Rhinelander, mm-hmm. and we go up there quite often, and every time I go up there now, it seems like the bald eagle population improves. Mm-hmm. I see more juveniles and youngsters flying around, and it's really a beautiful sight.
Mm-hmm.
We've also been at the International Crane Foundation quite a few times, and it's a beautiful area. But my question, a more basic question, is do you have some comparable crane species that fit in with the well-being of the bald eagle as well as that, or are they
do they get along together?
Are they in any trouble, some species?
Oh, some species of cranes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's actually 15 species of cranes total that can be found around the world, and there's an organization called the IUCN, the Conservation Union, and they actually keep track of the status of cranes and other animals as well around the world. And according to their information, which includes research done by the Crane Foundation, 9 of those 15 species are threatened with extinction. So their numbers are low around the world. Here in Wisconsin, and of course throughout North America, the sandhill crane is actually doing really well, but the whooping crane would be one of those endangered species.
I see them around, and they're quite prevalent, and they look good, and they act like they're in real good shape.
The sandhills,
yeah. The sandhills. That's the only one that I really know well and can speak about.
Yeah. Well, the sandhills, almost in the same period as the bald eagles in Wisconsin, have been very much on parallel tracks. They're both wildlife success stories. About 1972, there were well under 100 occupied eagle territories in Wisconsin. And around that time, we probably knew of, there were maybe a similar number of cranes in the area, perhaps a few more, but not many. And both those populations have increased dramatically in the, what would that be, almost 40 years. Since the early 70s, and they're both really interesting wildlife success stories, and they've been, in fact, the sandhill crane was on the state threatened list in the 1970s, or at least the 1960s, and so they have similar pathways that they've followed, and they're really quite fun comparisons.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob, for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And we'll take some more calls. Lois in Algoma, you are up. Hi, Lois.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I want to just mention two things. First of all, about Algoma, we have quite a bit of open areas and wetland areas and kind of just swampy kinds of areas.
Yeah.
And I have, I've been watching this spring, as I did last year, but I think this year we might have two pairs of sandhill cranes in this area.
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful to hear and to see. I'd like to be to know if we'll be having a count of the sandhill cranes in the Algoma area.
Sure. And I bet you that Alyssa can give us the information on that. What about it, Alyssa?
Yeah, that's all part of this Saturday where you can contact the county coordinator up there. I don't remember which county Algoma is in, though.
It's in Kewaunee County.
Kewaunee, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Actually, if you want to email me at naturalist@savingcranes.org or give me a call, I can give you the information and send that out to you because I'm actually coordinating Kewaunee County this year.
Oh, all right. And you said it was naturalist?
Yep. Naturalists, pluraled, and then at savingcranes.org.
At savingcranes.
That'll
work. All right. And last point I wanted to make, a story that it is just so heartening. We have Roy Lukes here in this area. He's actually in Door County.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a naturalist, and he writes in the Door County Advocate stories every week. And I don't know how many years ago, he did write a story titled Helping Wildlife, because they do need our help. And a couple had, a man had actually rescued a small baby crane from a pail that had been submerged in a pond. And the way they knew about this was that the adult cranes had come up to their house and rapped on their window very loudly, they thinking that they would actually break the glass. And they ended up warning or letting humans, people, know about this baby crane that needed rescuing.
Oh, well, now there's a fantastic story, Jeb.
Well, it's an amazing story, and I guess at the very least, I don't think a turkey would ever do that, Larry.
No.
and so cranes are always continue to amaze and to interest people worldwide because these sorts of things always keep coming up.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks, Lois.
I enjoyed telling the story.
Yeah, it was a great story. Kurt in Oxford, it is up to you now. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, I heard your show last year. I'm going on my first count Saturday.
Cool.
Excellent.
And I went to the meeting. I met Gary Ertl, a real nice guy, and they showed me a grid. And he said, pick which area you want to do. And I said, well, how many? He goes, how many you think you can handle? You can do as many as you think you can handle, or you can do just one. And I looked on the map, and there's these two fields between my house and Oxford. But I go through, I've counted as many 60 cranes in there. They weren't on that map. I was curious, how do they decide the grids? And, you know, just kind of how that system works. And just a little more information. I guess there's only 24 counters in it in Marquette County, which surprised me. And he said the more the merrier. And the other thing is, do you have any pointers for a new guy? And maybe some of you old-timers out there, if they could call in and give us a few do's and don'ts.
Good points. And Alyssa, I'll turn to you.
Well, as far as the sites, each county has different sites that are created within it. And a lot of those were based on, I believe in the beginning, potential good habitats that cranes could be found in, as well as places that cranes were sighted in originally. And as we progress and go further, every year we have new sites that we create. And so if those two fields near your that you're going by aren't sites this year, we can definitely make them new sites because we always are looking for new places that cranes can be found.
One of the things, though, that I would add is that the crane count is pretty good at most of the sites that are counted are focused on wetlands.
Ah.
And a lot of the agricultural fields, we know the Oxford area quite well because our long-term research area is near Briggsville, which is quite close to Oxford. And so the goal is really to get a pretty good estimate of where breeding birds are, and those are typically you're going to hear or see in a wetland. And so just with birds in agricultural fields, we'd have to count huge, huge areas. And actually, you're kind of indirectly bringing up that point in that Marquette County is probably one of the densest areas for cranes in the state. And 24 counters is not at all maximum number of counters that you could have for Marquette County. If I remember correctly, they have well over 100 sites to count. And mm-hmm. so they have a lot of need for people to count. And Marquette County, if you want to go and count, would be a great place to go because we really need to get people out for those sites that already exist. But we couldn't possibly count every place where there are cranes in the spring because a lot of those agricultural fields, it's just too big of an area.
Yeah, just too big of an area. Well, now, what about first-timers out there? What are some good tips for people?
The best thing is to go to bed early the night before. I find that helps me. Also, just doing the preparation, going to the county meetings is helpful. But if you can't make it to the county meeting, checking out our website, again, cranecount.org. And on the website, you can find out more information about how to do the count and what to look for. And there's great images of the cranes so that you can get a better visual feel of what they looked like, but also the sounds that they make. And when we do the crane count, we're not just looking for the birds. We're also looking for listening for the birds. And so you may not see a bird, but you can hear a bird and still count that sound.
So if you're a counter and let's say you've got a couple of grids to cover or maybe three or four grids, you start at one at 5:30, let's say, you watch and listen for a little while and then move on to the next grid, I suppose. Huh?
Yeah.
You can. One of the things that what Alyssa's alluding to is the unison call is a striking call, and
yeah.
it can be heard over a great distance. And so if you're covering, you would want to cover adjacent sites.
Okay.
And so if you heard it in one site, you can go over quickly and see if that call came from that particular site and also take
gotcha.
A look at the other site. And that ability to hear allows you really to do that much better than if you were just watching.
That makes good sense. Tom in Mequon has a question for you or a comment. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a question and a little story. I'm not sure if there even are cranes that I'm hearing or seeing, but a couple people have told me that they are, and I'm wondering how can I tell what kind of crane that I'm hearing? It's like a gurgling, burbling sound, and when I've been close to them, like 30, 40 feet away when they've flown overhead, they can be really loud sound.
Yeah. They are that. Well, you can hear those sounds, can't you, on your site, on your website?
Several of the sounds that cranes make are on our website, and you can go to the Sandhill Crane information and listen to the guard calls, the unison calls, the contact calls that they make.
The gurgling description suggests that you probably are listening to Sandhill Cranes. That's
yeah.
a reasonable way of describing it. I don't want to break Wisconsin Public Radio's equipment and repeat it here because it is a loud call. It's quite likely that you are hearing it. One of the fun things about cranes is they are native to these open wetlands that are quite large. And one of the things that they have evolutionarily or physiologically is that their trachea is convoluted through the sternum, which is different from our own because it's T-shaped. But that ability allows that call to resonate off the entire skeleton. And it's really amazing as to how that really increases the sound and the distance that the call can carry.
Interesting. Thanks, Tom.
I've got a story, too, if you're interested.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
About a quarter mile from where I live, there's a wetlands, and I've been noticing birds the last year or so, and I've been hearing these birds, and in the evening, it was like late fall, like October, they would make noise, and I would call back to them, I guess I'd call it. I'd like mimic their sound, and I've noticed that they would seem to respond to my sound. And then as a surprise, a few weeks after that started, I could hear a great commotion over there by them, by the pond area, and I could just see them, a couple flying to the west, and all of a sudden they flew towards me, and they flew right overhead, and they called down to me as I was calling up to them. And then this spring, about a month ago, they were in a different area, and I could hear their noise, and I would call to them, and I could hear a couple would call back to me, and then like 10 of them flew overhead, like real low, like 30 feet. That was amazing to me. And I was wondering if you'd ever had anybody else had that happen to them.
Well, calling in cranes is not a typical way that people have interacted with cranes, but, you know, sometimes things are possible. And if you got a great view of them, it seems, you know, it can work.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Tom. Thank you for calling. Randy in Madison is up next. Hi, Randy.
Hi. What a fun show. My wife and I have 30 acres of land up on the Fox River in northeastern Columbia County. And we're at the far eastern end of Swan Lake in a marsh pocket. We have a little piece of high ground that's essentially surrounded by lowland. And there's probably in the order of 300 or 400 acres of marsh pocket in there, surrounded by pretty big woods. So I don't know as if this little pocket of marsh is getting covered by your crane count. But in the last couple of years, my wife and I have easily counted 6 to 10 pairs of nesting cranes in there, easily. And this is just casual walking around looking at it.
That is very cool.
It's really something.
Alyssa, a comment?
Well, you know, I honestly also don't know if we're counting specifically that spot. I do know where Swan Lake is, though, and it's a beautiful area. What I would suggest is to find out more about whether or not that site's being counted. And if you're interested in counting, to contact our Columbia County coordinator. And her name is Joy Erickson. And Joy would be probably happy to see and check into that. Her phone number is 608-635-4144.
4144, okay.
Exactly.
All right.
I will ask her because we haven't been involved in the crane count, but we both love cranes, and I think it would be something fun to do.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Randy.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. And on to Timothy in Kenosha. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I was just wondering, I've heard that they allow them to hunt the cranes in Texas, and I was wondering if that's true or if it's not true. If it is, it's terrible because the cranes are my favorite bird.
All right. What about the hunting situation, Jeb?
There are some cranes in North America that are hunted. None of the populations or the population that exists in Wisconsin or in the upper Midwest is not hunted. But birds that winter in Texas and Mexico and New Mexico and places like that that fly up to Canada and the Intermountain area, they are hunted there. You know, the idea of hunting is one, it's basically a social question in terms of how people feel about using a resource in that particular way, and people vary in their opinion on that across the nation. So the population that we have in Wisconsin is not hunted, but other populations are.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Linda in Black Earth, it's up to you now. Hi, Linda.
Hello. Joining you again. I just wanted to tell you guys a story that I... an experience that I had when I was driving down to central Illinois about 3 Octobers ago. I was just driving on a country road and looking up into the air, and I saw a group of geese flying along. And then I looked a little ways away in the sky, and then I saw a bunch of cranes, about 12 cranes flying. And by the time, just at one point, they intersected. Like, of all the place in the air that they could be, they both grouped into one another. It was amazing. I just thought, how lucky can I be to be in this point in all the sky to have these two groups of birds colliding with one another, and neither of them wanted to give way. They just, you know, kind of got a little off course and bumped in, not really bumped into each other, but they had to veer off, and I just thought that was so amazing.
Well, there was probably something, a current up there of some sort, Jeb, that they both wanted.
Well, it could well be. I don't know. It's hard to say. Sometimes birds do inexplicable things. We've actually had a couple examples of that today that, you know, it's hard to apply science to. But, yeah, that can happen. If they're geese don't look for thermals, and cranes do. And so I don't know why cranes and geese, other than maybe they both had good tailwinds and weren't paying attention to what was in front of them. I don't know.
It's a great story, though. Thanks, Linda, very much for calling. And I think we got Jim in Spring Green who's on board here. So let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Yes, I've been listening to your program, and while I was listening, I saw that we have an eaglet in the nest that I've just been able to see for the first time, so I thought I'd give you that comment.
Cool. But
my question is, with the water so high in the slough, is there going to be competition between geese and cranes for nesting sites?
Jim, I don't, especially I know the slough that you're talking about, I don't think so. Cranes and geese are territorial, but they don't tend to be territorial towards each other. They tend to be territorial towards their conspecifics or the other birds that are in the same group. Now, what the rising waters in the slough will do is it will cause nests to be lost. I know of several crane nests in the sloughs that are near there that have been lost because of the rising waters, and the birds will recycle and re-nest. Geese are less prone to it because they'll often nest on muskrat houses and things like that, so they're a little less prone to being flooded out, but that can happen. When geese have their goslings hatch out, they can be crane food, so there's a competition that can occur in that way, but it's more of a predator-prey relationship.
Very interesting. Well, here we are running out of time. Just to remind people, Alisa, if they want to get involved in the crane count, it's this weekend. You can still get involved. It's Saturday from 5:30 in the morning to 7:30 in the morning. And then how do they do that again?
You can either check out our website at cranecount.org and find out more information there, or you can give us a call at 608-356-9462, my extension 127, or you can send me an email at naturalist@savingcranes.org.
Well, a real pleasure to have you both with us today. Thank you so much, and it'll be a fun weekend for a lot of people. I know that for sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for having us, and go to bed early.
That's for sure. Jeff Barzin is the field director, and Alisa Rod is the lead naturalist for the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. The crane count this weekend all over the state. Great chance for you to get involved in something very worthwhile. Have some good and get a great start to the weekend. You're going to be up early if you're going to be out there by 5:30 in the morning. But I tell you what, that's a beautiful time of the day to be out there. I love it. And if you haven't experienced it for a while, this Saturday would be a great time to do it. Thanks again to Jeb and Alisa. Coming up, we're going to talk with Jennifer Cheverini about her latest book. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.